Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
I got this mobile home part, right? I'm counting all the rooms in the mobile home. That means I can freaking triple, quadruple my cash flow, which again, I told y'all, when it comes to commercial space and mobile home parks, their valuation is different. The way they're valued is different. Their valuation is based off the cash flow that it generates. So that means if I could double, triple, quadruple my cash flow, what else am I doing simultaneously? I'm doubling, tripling, quadrupling my valuation on my mobile home park. So that means that's more money that I can pull out when it comes to this refinance. So I put a ghost ad up on Facebook Marketplace to test it out. I said rooms for rent. And I put up a picture of a mobile home that looked like one of mine. I gave, you know, broke it. They gave a description of what would be in there, what I would be offering in my mobile home. Rooms for rent. Marvin, you don't really know me like that, but this nigga is one of the realest you'll ever meet ever in life. Not even in this space, but in life. So I tell you, I put that ad up and my DMs was flooded. With people trying to rent rooms in a mobile home in my mobile home park. Flooded.
Listen. If you're an entrepreneur struggling to get funding because of your bad credit, then this video is for you. You see, I understand that when banks deny businesses for funding, they're not just denying businesses the capital they need, but they're also denying business owners the resources that they need to build the business of their dreams. And as a business owner, I've seen this happen over and over and over and over again, but I want you to know that there's a solution. Because here at Takeoff Financial, we've helped countless entrepreneurs just like you go from having poor personal credit and not being able to access funding to having perfect personal credit that they were able to leverage to access 5 to 6 figures in funding, and we want you to be the next one. So click the link above or below this video to secure your free consultation, and we'll see you on the other side of success, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today is a very special day because our guest today is a real estate mogul, investor, developer, and mentor. She's the owner of a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio, and she's educated hundreds of thousands on how to start their real estate investing journey as well. When it comes to investors that I've interviewed, there's been a bevy. But for this investor, I'll be sitting with today, she looks light, but the talk is heavy. Classy and sedity, Miss Put That Ish On, Fly Drone Looking Pretty, from North Carolina, where the women are finer. Our guest today is the one and only, Miss Shanika Lene. What's going on, family? How are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, I'm extremely excited to bring you on here. You know, like I said, I love talking real estate and bringing individuals on who are in the space and absolutely crushing it. I've been watching you for some time. So I'm happy to finally get the opportunity to bring you on here and give my people the game. Outside of that, how's everything on your end?
I am awesome.
Fantastic. Well, I'm extremely excited to get into it. I know I did an okay job of introducing you, but of course, I want to give you the opportunity to get the people who aren't familiar. So for those who are watching this right now, who exactly is Sis Shanika or Shanika Lene?
Oh my God. It's such a loaded question because I'm so multifaceted. Oh my God. But no, your introduction was amazing, actually. But I am North Carolina's own, and the women are absolutely finer in Carolina. But yes, I am from North Carolina, as you can hear from this little southern twang I got. I started real estate investing back in 2018, actually. I started wholesaling. Started wholesaling real estate in 2018. I did 6 figures in my first 6 months wholesaling. And then from there, like the momentum just kind of took off from that point. And I started learning other strategies, just adding different strategies to my tool belt. I started learning about creative finance, and that's where I started building my portfolio using the creative finance techniques. And then I started buying multifamily. So I started buying mobile home parks. So from buying mobile home parks, that kind of led me into the development. So now I'm in the process of developing my my own tiny home community, RV resort and glamping site. So it's kind of going to be a mixed use space kind of. And I'll be the first Black woman in the state of North Carolina to do so. So that's exciting.
Come on now, let's go.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. Hopefully the first phase will be done by summer of this year. So that's what we're shooting for. But yes, and then just the process of me sharing, I never wanted to be a quote unquote influencer, right? But just me, I've always been a person that liked to share information. Like if I see something and it's working and I'm like, I think other people can benefit. Like I've always been that type of person to share information, resources or whatever. So just me sharing, you know, what I was doing and how I was doing what I was doing, that kind of led into the whole influencer type of thing and the mentoring. I would just help people for free in the beginning, just, you know, but then it became overwhelming because I got too many people reaching out to me trying to get help. So that's how it kind of led from where I started to where I am now.
I love it. You know, it's funny. For people who don't know, I'm not sure if you remember, but my first time, I knew of you beforehand, but my first time meeting you in person was at Sheeta Three's event. So yeah. She was doing the, I think it was a Play for Play, the Play for Play event. Yeah. And at the time, the way that the event was set up, she would take like two different entrepreneurs within a respective space. And yeah, you guys would go like play for play. I think the person you were supposed to go up against didn't show up that day. So it was just you. Yeah. And you went on that stage, Sishanika. You went up on that stage and tore the building down. I'm in the back. Yeah. I'm eating. I'm living life lovely. I hear all this rumbling and ruckus in the front. I said, what is going on up there? I get up there. You see a young woman, 5'4", 5'5", tops, just pacing back and forth on the stage saying, you guys got to do this play. And after that, you're going to go to this place. You're going to go to this resource. And when you finish doing that, make sure you do this. Are you paying attention? I want to make sure you in the back taking it. I'm listening. I'm like, what is going on here at Play for Play? It was incredible. It was incredible. So then after that, you know, like I said, I kind of already saw the content that you were posting online. So I knew you knew what you were talking about. But just to see how passionate you were about putting other people in position to do the same and to avoid a lot of the mishaps and the mistakes and the lumps and bumps you took along your real estate journey so that they could get started and do the same, man. It was a pleasure and a treat for me. So once again, it really and truly is an honor for me to have you on here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Most definitely. Now, you said that you started your real estate investing journey back in 2018. I want to go a couple years before that. Let's go back to 2012. I think it's important. I think it's important because people see Sishanika now and they see hundreds of thousands of followers and they see all the milestones, but there was so much groundwork that had to be put in to set the foundation for that. Now, even though you officially started your real estate investing journey back in 2018, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was back in 2012 when you had just invested into your first real estate program. I believe it was around $8,000. And that was kind of like your first step into the real estate space. Talk to me a little bit about what that time in your life looked like and what was going on there in your first introduction to the real estate space.
Wow, you really do your homework. I'm impressed. Yeah. Okay, so back then, I don't know if I want to go back now. So this was on the brink of me leaving a very tumultuous relationship that I was in. So I had just left, and I say that very mildly, but I had just left that situation. I had to start over from scratch. No money, no car. I had to flee my home that I had purchased. Mm-hmm. I fled the state. That's how tumultuous, you guys should read between the lines. That's how tumultuous it was. I fled the state, and I went to start over in a new state. So in the process of me starting over, trying to build my life back up, right? I have a degree in finance. So at the time that I had left that situation, I was a stay-at-home mom, so I wasn't working. So I had to go back to corporate America, which I did not want to do, but I had to go back to corporate America just to start building myself back up. But because I had left, I had been gone from that space for so long, being a stay-at-home mom and wife and doing that whole thing. It's basically like when I went back into the workforce, I had to start back over from like the bottom, like entry level. You know what I mean? So I had an entry level job in corporate America, making a little or nothing. I always knew I've been an entrepreneur. I really do believe that some people are born entrepreneurs. I'm definitely one of those people. I was born an entrepreneur. I just know, like, in my spirit, my soul, my everything is aligned with entrepreneurship. So I always knew that that wasn't for me. So long story short, I read this book. I hate plugging stuff without having a link, but I read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right, by Robert Kiyosaki, which a lot of people have read at this point, I'm sure. But I read that book and like I was like, oh my God, real estate, right? I got to get into this real estate thing. So I actually went to his seminar. I used my tax refund, and I bought into his program, and that's where the $8,000 came from. I bought into his wholesaling program.
Yeah. Got you. Now, what's interesting about that is from 2012, like I said, you started investing in 2012. Well, you jumped into the space in 2012, but you actually started investing in 2018. And somewhere in between there, you actually took a step away from real estate. That's you started right. dibbling and dabbling, if I remember correctly, in the e-commerce space. You had success there. Right, but then ultimately came back. I'm on it. Listen, so you had some success in the real estate, in the e-commerce space, and ultimately from there, found your way back in real estate. Could talk a little bit about that? What happened there?
Okay, good question. Not too many people impressed me, but I'm impressed. Okay, so yeah, so I bought the course, the real estate course, but I didn't really like get into it. Like I didn't really implement, right? It was so much stuff. Like it was a lot going on. And I just take personal responsibility. I just did not implement, right?
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I got to find something else. And two, I was a single mom. I had just restarted. I was in a new state, a new place. You know what I'm saying? I'm starting over. So at the time, it just didn't fit with what I currently had going on. So I'm like, okay, again, because I'm still an entrepreneur at heart, I'm like, I got to find something that I can do still on the side that will work with my current situation, with my schedule, with, you know, everything that I had going on at the time. So I found e-commerce. I started an online boutique first. I started an online boutique. I had relatively good success with that. But at the time, my grandmother fell ill. Mm. They called and was like, listen, come back to North Carolina. Grandma, they saying she may not make it. You know, she got a few days left to live. They calling everybody to come see about grandma. Mm-hmm. I went back to North Carolina. I left everything in the state where I was at. I left everything there, went back to North Carolina. I had intended on just going back home to say goodbye to my grandma. But God, I don't want to go too long story short, I got there and we in hospice. My family's there. Like everybody's like, I just couldn't see my family, my dad going through this type of pain. I took action and I went and I started juicing for my grandma. I made her some herbal concoctions. And my grandma got up out of that hospice. I stayed home in North Carolina for a few months helping take care of my grandma. So I had left all my inventory home. Like I had left everything. So I kind of stopped with that for a minute to help take care of my grandma. And while I was there taking care of my grandmother, my uncle introduced me to another e-commerce opportunity. And that's where I started selling. I don't know which e-commerce you saw, but that's when I started selling on, I started drop shipping, and then I started selling on Amazon. I had my own product line on Amazon doing six figures. So my first year I started like May of that year. I got my product live probably around July. So my first year I did about 33,000, 35,000, six figures after that. selling on Amazon. So I was doing very well, relatively speaking, on selling on Amazon. But I'm just one of those type of people, Marvin. I'm a very free spirited type of person, and I get bored quickly with things. So
I'm the same way.
Really? So yeah. Where some people, a lot of people ask me, like, why the hell would you stop a six-figure business? Because right. I was bored with it. Okay, that's number one. I got bored with it. Number one, it wasn't challenging it anymore. I'm a mom, so I had three small children at the house, no adult interaction. I'm homeschooling at the time. I'm running a business, and I'm home with these little babies all day, and the only interaction I'm having with adults is when I go to the UPS store to ship my products to Amazon. I'm like, you know what? I can't do this. I can't do this
right.
no more.
Right.
I cannot do this no more. So that's when I was like, wholesaling. Let me get back to that. Let me go back to real estate. So that's where the transition went back from e-commerce to real estate.
I love it. Now, you find yourself, after having the success you have in the e-commerce space, you find yourself back in the real estate space.
Yeah.
You get back in pretty much where you had initially started in 2012 with wholesaling. Yeah. Where exactly does mobile home investing come into the picture? Because your space of real estate that you occupy and are absolutely crushing it in is not a space that, like, most people I know in real estate are typical, like, fix and flip and buy and hold with, like, regular residential properties,
yeah.
other with commercials. I don't really know too many people that are in that mobile home investing space. How exactly did you find yourself going from the wholesaling space to now finding yourself mobile home investing?
Good question. So, in the midst of me building my platform by happenstance, a lot of other real estate investing, I don't want to call him a guru, because when I say guru, a lot of times I'm being funny. So okay. he wasn't a guru. He was a real real estate investor that I respected. We had a mutual respect for one another. So I also have, while I was building my platform, I started my own real estate investing Facebook group, which blew up as well. And he wanted to collaborate with me to come in and teach a class in my Facebook group. And it was a mobile home class. He wanted to teach a mobile home investing class. So we did this mobile home investing marathon for 3 days for like 8 hours a day. It was crazy. Like, it was insane. Yes. It was insane. Like, we went for 8 hours a day for 3 days teaching mobile home investing.
Crazy.
So as he's teaching, I'm on there with him, basically like moderating with him, but I'm learning. I'm taking notes and learning at the same time. Now, mind you, although I didn't have a formal mobile home investing knowledge, but I grew up in a mobile home. I lived in a mobile home, you know. I lived in a mobile home, and I lived in a small town in North Carolina where the majority of people lived in mobile homes.
Right.
So I was always familiar with it, but not from the investing standpoint. So that class really enlightened me, because he was saying how he was able to retire himself from his job in 6 months. Mm. And I'm like, oh, shoot, 6 months mm-hmm. from mobile home investing. And I'm familiar with it, because obviously I grew up in one. So I'm like, oh. So that's where I got started with mobile home investing, from collabing with another real estate investor, teaching it to other people in my group. I started, the next week, I went and bought a mobile home.
Went and bought a mobile home and haven't looked back since.
Ain't looked back since.
Come on now, listen, and fast forward some several years later, you know, once again, when we talk about individuals that are premier figures in the space, if your name doesn't come up, it's probably not a conversation that's worth being had, if we're being honest. Come on now. So with that being said, we have the full context and the full scope of just the steps that you've taken to get here. And we're clear on all the success you've had. But there are people who now their ears are perking up. They're like, mobile home. I know about real estate. I ain't never heard nothing about no mobile home investing.
Yeah.
I want to start to dive into this space that you've had such great success in, to where we can teach people just a step-by-step blueprint of what they can do to get started in a space as well. So if I'm listening to this, I love everything Sis Shanika is saying. It sounds absolutely fantastic. I want to start from ground zero and build this thing up. What is the first step in finding mobile homes to invest in?
So what I like are bandit signs, right? I love bandit signs. It's one right behind me. Kind of, y'all
can I see it. Look, tucked away in the corner. I see it.
You see it? Okay.
Yeah.
I see it down there. So yeah, that one, we buy houses, but I got some to say we buy mobile homes too. So I love those. Okay. I put those up throughout the city. Mm-hmm. Because the most motivated folks are going to be calling you. I love when people call me because I know they're serious when they call me and you know, saying, hey, I got something. I seen you sign to say you buy mobile homes. I got one for you. So right. that's my favorite way of finding mobile homes is bandit signs.
Got you. Are there other resources that, because it's funny you say that because I'm based in New York. I still see bandit signs now scattered throughout. I'm like, these still work. And I speak to real estate investors and they're like, yo, they still get deals. I'm talking about deals
using bandit signs. Yeah, they still work because a lot of gurus try to create like new secrets and things like that just to sound like they're on some cutting edge technology and things like that. And sometimes there are some tweaks, but listen, in this real estate investor space, that good old school type of, you know, thing, they still very much work. So I don't necessarily put them out myself, but I still get them out there. And yes, they still absolutely work. That's my favorite marketing channel for mobile homes.
Now, I want y'all to pay attention. She said she doesn't put up herself. If you watch her Instagram story, I promise you, at least once a week, you're going to see her put her videos up of her daughter out there hanging them bandit signs up, getting those deals for the family business. So trust
my daughter, my brother.
Let's go.
Somebody going to get them out there.
Listen, somebody going to get them out there one way or another, right? Yes. Now, outside of the bandit signs, because I know, there are different like online resources. Would you have any of those that you recommend, or is it simply just bandit signs and that's kind of just what you swear by? Or is there anything else we could potentially look into?
So there are several other ways. You could pull a list, motivated seller list. You could pull a list. Again, y'all, and it also kind of depends on your budget because a lot of people, when they get started in certain areas of real estate investing, they want to because they don't necessarily have a lot of money, right? Mobile home investing is one of those vehicles that is ideal for folks that don't have a lot of money because the barrier to entry is not that high, right? So I try to give people those type of resources that don't cost as much because I really want to see people win and take action. And if I give you a whole bunch of things, you're not going to take action on them. So the ones that I would recommend for you guys that are really serious and that really want to do this and take action, the bandit signs, and Marvin, I can send you a link if you want. I can send you a link to where I get my bandit signs from.
Let's do it.
I'll send you that. I'll send you the link where I get my bandit signs from. They're 89 cents. You can get them for 89 cents a piece, which is relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Also, you can go right there on Facebook Marketplace and do a search. That's free. You could do a search there, but you don't want, this is the caveat, you don't want to search mobile homes because that's not what's going to come up on Facebook Marketplace. You're going to get RVs and, you know, stuff like that. You want to search manufactured homes on Facebook Marketplace. Okay. That's the key. Search manufactured homes on Facebook Marketplace. Again, that's free. That's a free source for you. And Google, y'all, another free source, Google. You can literally go and Google mobile home parks near me. I want everybody to go and do that right now. And you'll be surprised at what comes up. Even if you live in a city like New York, you'll be surprised at what comes up when you do a search. Like mobile home parks near me. Do that search.
I love it. Now, diving even deeper into that, right? You kind of just referenced it. There are mobile homes and then there are mobile home parks. So when we talk about starting to invest in this space, for someone who's new and looking to break in, is it possible to simply just buy one mobile home within a park of other mobile homes? And if I'm looking to get started, does it make sense for me to start just with that one mobile home? Or should I look to try and buy an entire park of mobile homes to go ahead and get my feet wet in the space?
So I would not recommend buying, as a new investor, I would not recommend buying a mobile home park first. Okay. I would not recommend doing that. So Sishanika is a little different though, right? I do things differently than a lot of people. I have a relatively higher risk tolerance than most, but I'm extremely confident in myself and my abilities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I bought a mobile home park first.
See, not even following your own advice.
No, I'm lying. I'm gonna take that back. I did buy one mobile home first, and I fixed and flipped one mobile home first, and then I bought a park. But I would not recommend that to new. But I wasn't a new investor either, though. So I owned other properties, and I had been real estate investing, you know, wholesaling and doing other things, creative finance. So I had been doing other things prior to that. So I wasn't completely new. But no, I would not recommend buying a mobile home park first. That's the first question. And you asked another question, which was a good question. So you asked, would you recommend buying one mobile home, or can you buy one mobile home in a mobile home park? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes, you can. And which I actually would recommend that. The only thing with that is, essentially, you have to get permission from the park owner or the park manager, though, to do that, because a lot of park owners are not investor friendly. They only want people in their park who are going to stay in the mobile home a lot of times. So you would need permission, but you can absolutely do it. And I would recommend you doing it that way.
Got you. Now, another thing too, when we're looking into these mobile homes and you know, as we get more experience, these mobile home parks, you said something about how with your first mobile home that you purchased, it was almost like a fix and flip. I know when we're talking about like residential properties, I'm not an investor, but I've sat down with enough to have some insight. I've heard them mention something about like turnkey properties, where essentially you get a property, it's pretty much little to no rehab that needs to be done. You buy it, you kind of just flip it right then and there. When we're investing in these mobile home spaces, how much rehab is really going into it, whether I'm buying a park or whether I'm buying a mobile home, in terms of getting them up to good enough condition to where it's like, all right, now I can go ahead and flip this off?
Yes. So that's another good question. So again, since Shanika's a little crazy. So the first mobile home that I bought was a gut job. Don't recommend that either.
Okay. But
yeah, don't recommend that. But that's what I did. It was a complete gut. And we basically built a new house by the time we were done with it. But so how much work goes into it? Again, it's going to vary, but I would recommend definitely not doing a gut job, right? I would recommend some more cosmetic as your first investment property. And what do I mean by cosmetic? When I say cosmetic, I mean maybe put down some new floors, right? Some new floors, some paint. You may have to fix some holes in the wall, you know, some things like that. You may want to go in and reglaze a tub or even replace, you know, a toilet or, you know, some things like that. That's what I mean by cosmetic. Mm-hmm. That's not what I did on my first one. But let me give you just some price points so your audience can kind of understand what I mean. So my first one, I probably spent $20K on it. But still, a lot of you like 20K. Some of you like 20K. So, you know, some of you are in different places. But 20K, relatively speaking, is still small compared to, you know, when you're dealing with single family homes, right? It's still relatively inexpensive. But in the world of mobile home investing, though, that's kind of on the high end when it comes to rehabbing. So now I'm in the process of rehabbing mobile homes in my mobile home park, one of my mobile home parks right now. So one of them we did, and it was, we did it completely. Like we did new vinyl siding, you know, mop the top. Like it looks fantastic. We spent $13,000, making it look absolutely new. So you can see, like, you know, it's going to vary, but you kind of get an idea of what I mean about when I say, you know, rehabbing or fixing, flipping a mobile home.
So then now kind of diving deeper into that, you kind of just broke down some of the specs of different things that you've done to just fix up even a deal that you're working on right now.
Yeah.
Circling back to like the residential real estate space where I'm more familiar, I know they have a term called ARV, which is after repair value.
Yes.
So how does that now get affected? Is there any difference of an approach to that on the mobile home side of things compared to real estate when it comes to like, hey, if I get this mobile home and I put $10,000, $15,000 in it, it's going to increase the value of this mobile home to where now I'll be able to make an additional $15,000 on this deal or $20,000 on this deal.
Yeah, good question. So we don't use ARV per se in the mobile home space. So when you have an individual mobile home, it's considered personal property. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You get a title just like you would for a car. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a mobile home, if you say you went and purchased a mobile home in a mobile home park, you only own that mobile home. So that's really no real ARV. But what you can do is two things. If you're new, you can, again, use Facebook Marketplace, go on there and look and see what other remember, you're going to search manufactured homes. Look and see what other manufactured homes are selling for that have already been done, that have already been, you know, rehabbed and complete and are move in ready. That gives you an idea of what you can sell yours for. We use things like that in the mobile home investing space when it comes to individual mobile homes. There's no real ARV. All right. But if your mobile home is attached to land, then it becomes real estate. And now you can kind of use comps, but even then, it's still going to mm-hmm. vary a little bit because you're not really truly comping it to a single family home. It's still a mobile home at the end of the day, even though it's still on it's on land and the value significantly increases when it's attached to land versus when it's just a mobile home in and of itself. It significantly increases. There's still no real ARV per se. And I hate to say that because it may be confusing to people. But that's just the reality of the situation.
Got you. Okay. So now we have context on just some of the different ways that we can find mobile homes and what makes most sense for us where, depending on where we are in our real estate journey, where if we want to, you know, go shoot for the stars and say, hey, listen, after we get our first mobile home, we're going to do what Sis Shanika did. We're going for the whole park versus if we want to do a more of a gradual approach, like, all right, I'll shoot here my first mobile home. Maybe I'll get another one, then another one. Then maybe we'll look into the park. We're good there.
Yeah.
I want to now switch over to the financing side of things, right? Let's say we leverage Facebook Marketplace.
Yes.
We have our eyes on a mobile home that we want to go ahead and secure. And we want to be able to explore all the different options that are available to us when it comes to financing this deal, right? How can we go about securing these mobile homes financially once you've gone ahead and found one that we want to go ahead and get secured?
Good. So again, it depends on where you are. In each individual is going to be in a different space. So again, I started off wholesaling. Wholesaling is one of the easiest, fastest ways to make relatively good money quickly. So I had cash. All right. So, and then your mobile homes, again, the barrier to entry is so low. Like they're so cost effective, like they don't cost a lot. And again, that's going to vary per market. But mm-hmm. here I can get a single wide mobile home for $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000. So I use cash.
Really?
I use cash. Wow. But for, you know, if you don't have that, or if you're in a market that demands a little higher purchase price, you can always use credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can leverage credit cards, right? You know, business credit, business funding, things mm-hmm. like that. I'm a big proponent of creative finance. I love creative finance. I have never gotten a traditional loan and purchased any property that I own. I've never gotten a loan. I've never used a credit card to purchase any properties that I have. I've either used cash or creative finance. Personally.
What exactly is creative finance? Because I've heard you talk about it a little bit here and there, but let's break it down for people watching.
Good question. So what creative finance is a way to basically acquire properties without using traditional methods like banks and loans and mortgages. You don't need income verification. You don't need credit. You don't need any of those things you typically have to take into a bank. or a mortgage lender or anything like that. You don't need any of those things with creative finance. It's essentially an agreement between you and the seller. The seller becomes the bank, right? The seller becomes the bank and you pay the seller versus paying the bank. Long story short. So whatever agreement, say you go on Facebook Marketplace tonight and you find a property that you're interested in and you want to use a strategy. Essentially, you will reach out to the seller, let them know that you're interested. And, you know, once you build that rapport and all those good things, you go out there and look at it and you build a rapport, you're talking to them or whatever. And you ask them, you know, you already know that what their purchase price is. Say it's $25,000. They want $25,000 and you want to use creative finance. You would simply tell them like, Hey, Mr. Seller, you know, I'm really interested in buying your property. I see you have a list for $25,000. I don't have a problem paying your purchase price, right? I'm willing to pay full price for the property. However, are you willing to allow me to pay you over time? To make it simple, you don't use the terms creative finance and seller finance. They get confused by that. They're confused. They're not going to be interested in it. Will you allow me to pay you over time? They're either going to say yeah or nay, or they're going to ask you some more questions about it. Well, what does that look like? What does that mean? I'm glad you asked. Right? And so that's kind of how I do it. And I go from there. But it's not going to work on every seller. Every seller is not going to be interested. But I don't need every seller to be interested. I only need the ones that are interested to be interested. And I'm going to close the deal.
That's it.
The biggest risk that most entrepreneurs take is trying to build a successful business without funding. But what if I told you that risk doesn't have to be your reality just by you having access to the right information? What's going on, family? My name is Marvin Francois, and just a couple of years ago, I was a new entrepreneur trying to turn my dreams of building a successful business into a reality. Now, once I learned that the key to me doing so was accessing business credit, I accessed the funding I needed, leveraged it to build multiple six-figure businesses, and I haven't looked back since. And now I want to give you the exact blueprint that I use to do this so that you could do the same for your business as well. So this Thursday, I'm going to be hosting my free Bankroll Your Business Masterclass, where I'm going to be teaching you how to access a minimum of $50,000 in funding, whether you have good credit, bad credit, or no credit, so that you can take that funding to build the business of your dreams. But listen, we only have 100 seats, and by the time you watch this video, about half of them are going to be gone. So if you haven't already, click the link above or below this video to secure your seat, and I'll see you on Thursday. Let's go.
To dive deeper into creative finance, I've heard you talk about how you've leveraged this method to where not only are you securing the property, but how you do it is you'll get the deed of the property, but the owner keeps the mortgage. Explain that, because when I read it, I was like, how? What do we got going on here? Break that down for me.
Okay, so that's a method called subject to.
Okay.
It falls up under the umbrella of creative finance. It's just a different strategy, mm-hmm. right? So that particular strategy that you just described is called subject to. And essentially what happens is you acquire the property subject to the existing mortgage that's in place. All right? So the mortgage stays in the seller's name. But you are responsible for taking over the payments and you get the deed at closing.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases. Yeah. So I know a lot of people are thinking like, why in the world would a seller agree to do that? So there are different scenarios, right? Again, this is not for every seller, but there are different scenarios where a seller is interested. So for example, the property that I have right now, that I purchased, it was a hybrid, and I hope I don't confuse people, Lord have mercy, but it was a hybrid deal. So it was subject to, plus I used seller financing as well, right? I had to combine the two things. So the situation was when I went under contract, you know, we sent the contract to the attorney starts doing the title search. The title search comes back and says, hey, we found a mortgage on this property. Now, seller told me free and clear, right? But sellers lie. Sellers lie.
They do.
So title search came back. It's a mortgage. So what happened was on the mobile, it was actually the last mobile home park that I bought. It had a house on it. And the house and the mobile home park was on one deed. Weird, but that's what it was. So the house that was attached to the property still had a mortgage on it, even though the mobile home park itself was free and clear, but we still couldn't close on the deal unless I would have had to come to the table and pay the mortgage off, which I didn't want to do that because I didn't even want the house. It had nothing to do with what the deal that me and him had worked out with his mobile home park, right? So what I was able to do just to save the deal because the seller also was ready to close. He needed the money. He wanted the money so he could, you know, he's as decided and ready to close too, because he gets my down payment.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would have had to happen if I didn't know creative finance, we would have had to, get a survey, subdivide the house out, send those plans to, county zoning and planning department. They would take 6 months to a year to approve it, and he'd had to wait to that time frame to close on the deal. Mm. Neither one of us wanted to do that. So I said, okay, this is what we can do. I can acquire the property subject to, you keep paying the mortgage payment. I have the property now. Then we could go through the process and subdivide it and do all that whole thing. But you still get my down payment. You get my monthly payments that we agreed upon. And we do this on the back end while I'm, you know what I'm saying? While I'm still making this happen on this end. Works perfect. Win-win situation. So that was the situation that happened with that particular property. But in less complicated situations, you would just take over the payments of the mortgage, right? And the mortgage would stay in the seller's name, and you get the deed to the property without all the other stuff that I mentioned.
Come on now. Listen, I'm getting excited. This is getting good. We didn't even really get into the meat and potatoes yet, but we just talking about the financing side of stuff. But this is... Yeah. This is that when I, like I said, when I did was kind of just doing my research and I stumbled across this, I had never heard of anything like this within the real estate space at all. This is something. This is definitely something.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a beautiful concept. A lot of people don't know it. They don't know how to utilize it. Just with any other real estate investing vehicle, right? It does have some risk associated with it.
Right.
But obviously, you mitigate that risk by making sure that you have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted, and you just have the proper education. That's the best thing. Just make sure that you have the proper education.
1,000%. Even though for you, like you said, most of your deals that you've done up until this point have either been creative finance or you've pretty much used your own cash that you've gotten from wholesaling. Where do you stand when it comes to leveraging like hard money lenders? Because I know that that's also a very the face told me everything I needed to know. The face told me everything is it that bad?
I mean, I don't use them. I don't need them. So I don't use them. I don't have a need for them. So I don't use them. I'm really not a fan of fix and flips.
Okay. More of a buy and hold, essentially.
Yes. And well, again, I love creative finance, right? So even the properties that I buy and hold, I don't do it in the traditional buy and hold way that most other investors do. So the same way I acquire properties using creative finance, I sell them the same way. Mm-hmm. So for instance, some of you are probably more familiar with like a rent to own type of deal, right? That's creative finance. That's seller financing. So when I get a property, I sell it using creative finance for a few reasons. Again, I don't like the traditional methods that most people use when it comes to real estate investing. I don't want to be a landlord, but I want the cash flow. So how do I solve that, right? I sell my properties on a kind of like a rent to own type of way. So my tenant buyers are now, they're responsible for the taxes on my properties. They're responsible for all the maintenance on my properties.
Come on now.
They're responsible for all the repairs on my properties. So I don't get no phone calls. Don't call me because you own it. You bought it. You own it. You're responsible for fixing it. So all I get is cash flow. I don't like none of those traditional ways of doing hardly anything, really.
Right. You found a way that works for you when it comes to buying the property, maintaining a property, and just leveraging it as much as it possibly can for the goals you have as a real estate investor. And I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
Diving deeper into that, another aspect of real estate that, you know, a lot of investors that I sit down with, we talk about the refinance process. You buy this property, you do all this incredible work to it. The value of it has gone through the roof. Now you want to be able to pull that equity from the property and probably go wash, rinse, repeat, and do it all over again to secure another deal.
Yep.
Is that approach similar in the mobile home investing space? How are we able to get all this equity that we have in this mobile home park or in this mobile home that we just, you know, put all this work into?
Yeah. So if you do an individual mobile home, it's not going to work.
No,
that's not going to work. No. So whenever you start real estate investing, right, you need to understand your exit strategy and your goals, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a goal of building equity, which is not really my thing, mm-hmm. Then mobile home investing is not the ideal for you if you're trying to build equity, right? If you mm-hmm. want to use the Burr method, you were kind of describing the Burr method. If you want to use that method, then mobile home investing ain't it. Mm-hmm. Mobile home parks, you absolutely can. Mobile mm-hmm. home parks, you can, right?
Right.
So one of the strategies that I'm actually using with one of my mobile home parks is just that. So essentially what we go in, it's a little bit different though when we're talking about commercial versus residential, right?
Right.
So a mobile home park is we're in the commercial side of it, right? Multifamily, right. Commercial side. So it's a little bit different. So on that side of it, we are going in and we're forcing appreciation by going in and rehabbing the mobile homes, right? We're doing some landscaping and, you know, making improvements and things like that, raising the rents, increasing the cash flow. We're forcing the appreciation so that we mm-hmm. can go in and do a refinance. So with the mobile home park that I just told you about using the creative finance deal, the strategies mm-hmm. that I've worked out, when it's all said and done, I'll be able to pull out over $3 million tax-free from that.
Stop. Hold on. Just let it breathe. Don't say nothing. Okay. Just let it breathe. Say what you just said again. But say it slow, because I want to make sure they heard what you just heard. Because I heard it. I want to make sure they heard it. Say it again, but say it slow.
Yes. So that mobile home park that I just described to you, that I purchased using creative finance, all right? Mm-hmm. I ain't use no banks, no loans, or nothing. I'll be able to pull out over $3 million tax-free from that property once I've finished with the improvements on that property.
Come on now. Listen. Yeah. Listen. That is, and once again, this is doing it your way. You're not dealing with the hard money lenders. You're not going in and out of the banks, right? You're not doing a lot of these traditional methods, finding a way that works for you and still making ridiculous amounts of, you know, success and money in the space as well. I want to dive deeper into the money side of things, right? Because you're an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. We're both within this digital sphere. And obviously, one of the things that we hear people talk about a lot is the multiple streams of income, And a lot of times, I'm sure you see it as well, especially for newer entrepreneurs, they come into a space and they think that that means they have to have eight different businesses. When really, it's more so about having one business and having eight streams within that business.
Yes.
I want to talk about you because one of the things I learned about you was not only are you an investor, you're also a licensed septic contractor.
Absolutely. So
could you talk a little bit about how being a septic contractor within this real estate business, this real estate empire that you're building, has allowed for you to create additional cash flow for your mobile home business?
Absolutely. So what I like to do is stay linear, right? Linear mm-hmm. movement. So it has to be in line with what I'm already doing. I wasn't always that way. I'm going to be honest with y'all. So Shanika had the shiny new thing syndrome.
Shiny object syndrome.
I had that thing. I tried everything. I've been a part of every type of MLM you could think of. I've been in it. Mm-hmm. I had that. So, and because again, I get bored easily and I'm just one of them type of people. I'm gonna do things my way. I listen to other people. I take it, but I run it through the filter of sis, right? I run it through my filter and I take what I need from it and I discard the rest that doesn't align with sis. Okay. Mm-hmm. So with septic, right? So this is how that all came about. So I didn't give y'all all of my accolades in the beginning. I kind of forget how much stuff that I have going on with my
septic. That's why I'm here. I'm here to come to bring you like, I forgot I made a couple hundred thousand off of that. That's why I'm here.
Right. So in the midst of me getting into the whole mobile home investor space, in and of itself. So legally, whenever you are selling mobile homes, because remember I told y'all I sell my mobile homes, seller finance, right? Mm-hmm. Legally in North Carolina, I can't remember if it's two or three, but you're not supposed to sell more than two or three in a calendar year if you don't have a license. So I wanted to do it the right way. So I went and got my mobile home dealer license, my mobile home salesperson license, and I got licensed to be able to move and set up mobile homes, right? Mm. So I got all of those licenses. So when I got those licenses, I'm also a serial learner, right? I'm forever a student. So I started reaching out to these other mobile home movers because I wanted to actually get some hands-on training with how you actually go and do this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I reached out to some mobile home movers in the area. Nobody was messing with me, right? I'm like, okay. So I finally found this guy. He was like, you know what? Because he tried to deter me from it. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hard work. Oh, and plus I'm a female, right? It's hardly no females in this space. Right. Oh, it's hard work. Oh, just back-breaking labor. Like, bro, like, you know who my ancestors are? Mm-hmm. Back-breaking mm-hmm. labor. I come from that. What? Mm-hmm. See my DNA. But he was trying to deter me. Oh, all this, all that. So then he was like, you know what? You give me I think he was just trying to see if I was serious. You give me $5,000, I teach you the whole game. I was like, all right. And he was like, oh, you serious, serious? I was like, and is.
Come on now.
And is. So, we made arrangements to go and apprentice under him for like 2 weeks. We went to Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I got an Airbnb, and we shadowed him for 2 weeks. I'm out there setting up mobile homes, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm learning. So while I'm learning from him, I rode with his partner. We went in the mobile home moving truck. We going to move this mobile home. So we just talking, chatting. So he was like, you know, we about to start moving away from, because they were trying to send me the equipment. I was like, why y'all selling the equipment? And he was like, well, we starting to move away from setting up mobile homes and we moving more into installing septic tanks. So I was like, do tell, sir. So I started asking about that. So mm-hmm. he just talking, you know, he just talking. And I'm just taking mental notes. Like, mm-hmm. And you say they pay you how much to do that? You say they paid you $12,000 to install the septic tank and it took you a half a day to do it?
Come on now.
All right. I'm picking up what you're putting down, sir. So mm-hmm. he's just telling me, telling me. So as soon as I got back home,
come on now. Going to work. Going to work.
How do I become a licensed septic, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked it up. I found a class. I took the class and I became a licensed septic contractor. So mm-hmm. that's where it started. But keep in mind, this was before I actually owned the mobile home park that I needed to develop. Mm. So once I seen that I needed to install these septic tanks for my own development, I'm like, hold up now. Now it's starting to make sense. I'm like, shoot. Because initially, I was just going to start installing them for people that we set up mobile homes for.
Right.
And when I got my own development, I'm like, instead of me paying freaking $800,000, which that's how much it would cost to install all the septic tanks that I need for this development, I'm going to pay my own company $800,000 to install my own septic tanks.
Come on now.
So that's how that got started.
Come on now. Listen. Do not let the high heels, don't let the earrings, the makeup, nothing. This Shanika be in the field. You understand me?
Trenches, baby. I be out there digging ditches with my steel toe boots.
and all of that. And I love it. And moreover, even diving more into that, you're just hearing that story of how you found yourself in that septic take space. Once again, multiple streams of income.
Yes.
That's just one. There's several others that you've also, I know you've also put in place for your mobile homes. Another one, how did you find out about the unregistered group homes? How did that come to be?
I'm a serial entrepreneur.
Come on now.
I'm a serial student. So another female in the space, right, was teaching it. And she and I, you know, are fairly close. And she invited me to come to her seminar. I went to her seminar, right? 2-day seminar on unlicensed group homes. And I learned about, you know, and again, everybody there was talking about either buying houses or some of them would rent, you know, rent from other landlords and, you know, contract a deal with them using that method, right? But I'm sitting there thinking about, I can do this in my mobile home park. I don't know nobody that's turning a mobile home park into an unlicensed group home or communal living type space. I don't know nobody. Well, people are probably going to start doing it now because I said it. I put it out there. But I don't know nobody, never heard nobody talk about it, never heard anybody mention it. But one of my superpowers, I think, is being able to pull information that I got from there, pull information that I got from there, and I will piece some stuff together. If a problem exists, I'll pull some stuff that I heard from and put that thing together and make it work. So I'm sitting there thinking about, okay, I got this mobile home park, right? I'm counting all the rooms in the mobile homes. That means I can freaking triple, quadruple my cash flow, which again, I told y'all, when it comes to commercial space and mobile home parks, that their valuation is different. The way they're valued is different. Their valuation is based off the cash flow that it generates. So that means if I could double, triple, quadruple my cash flow, what else am I doing simultaneously? I'm doubling, tripling, quadrupling my valuation on my mobile home park. So that means that's more money that I can pull out when it comes to this refinance.
Right.
That's all that's churning through my head. I'm like, oh, shoot. Yes, sir.
So, and then it was, go time from there.
That was it. But I still had to test it, right? I still had to test it because I never heard it. I never heard it talked about before and I never seen it done. So I had to test it. So what I did was that same Facebook marketplace that I told y'all to go and search on, what I did was I put up a ghost ad. So what do I mean by a ghost ad? A ghost ad is essentially an ad that you put up on Facebook marketplace, like you have this property for sale, and I put it up there as if I already, you know, was actually listing the property, right? But I want to see if I would get people that were interested in this area to rent rooms from me. And I wanted to see what price point would be most attractive, right?
Right.
So I put a ghost ad up on Facebook Marketplace to test it out. I said rooms for rent. And I put up a picture of a mobile home that looked like one of mine. I gave, you know, broke it, gave a description of what it'd be in there, what I would be offering in my mobile home. Rooms for rent. Marvin, you don't really know me like that, but Nick is one of the realest you'll ever meet. Ever in life, not even only in this space, but in life.
Right.
So I tell you, I put that ad up and my DMs was flooded.
Flooded
with people trying to rent rooms in a mobile home in my mobile home park. Flooded. So I'm like, oh, I got a waiting list right now. People trying to rent rooms.
Crazy.
Insane.
Crazy. Crazy. Now, here's the thing, right? We've talked a lot about the good of the real estate space. And this is where a lot of people get caught up when we talk about that shiny object syndrome. Because everybody sells the good, right? Yeah. Oh, cash flow. Oh, septic. Go ahead, get your septic license here. Yeah. You're going to make a little extra money here.
Generational wealth. Yeah.
Generational curses ran into family before they ran into me. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about the bad. Yeah. I don't care what you in, what you're doing, what you're selling. If you ain't taking no lumps, bumps, bruises, you probably not doing it at all. That's
you
just
ain't
true.
If you're doing it, you ain't doing it right.
You ain't doing it right. Right? Yeah. So I can't have you on here educating people about how to get in this space and not talk about the reality of what also comes with the good. Right? Oh, yeah. It's not always going to be sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, you've had your fair share of tenants, but one of them in particular went and burnt down one of your properties.
Woo.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Lord have mercy. Let me
get it. Yeah, go ahead. You got to collect yourself. You got to get yourself together.
So, yeah, man. So, in the mobile home park, right? So me and my real estate bestie, one of them, we purchased this mobile home park together. So we went out there and we just doing our due diligence. Like, it already had tenants there, you know, but they had not been paying. They hadn't been paying in months. They didn't pay the previous owner. They just been out there, you know what I'm saying? Just living their best life, rent free. So we go out there, we doing our thug thizzle like we supposed to, like, you know, we the new landlords, which we probably shouldn't have done anyway. We probably shouldn't have introduced ourselves as mm-hmm. new landlords. But, you know, again, we do things the way we want to do. But so we out there, we introducing ourselves as the new landlords, and, you know, we're giving them the information like, hey, we understand you haven't been paying rent, but we're going to give you until this time to start paying rent, or we're going to need you to vacate the premises, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We give all the tenants this information. So everybody complied but one. Mm. Even though she said she was going to comply, go back out there. Matter of fact, no, we didn't go back out there. My business bestie got a call. They called her and told her, hey, your property is on fire. We go out there. When I tell you, the property was burnt down to the ground. Burnt all the way down to the ground. Oddly enough, they stuff wasn't in there. Right? They stuff wasn't there. They definitely ain't pay us no damn rent. they ain't pay us nothing. They left mm-hmm. us a nice little surprise, a nice little FU farewell gift.
Whatever, what happened? Like, did you take them to court? Did you ever get, like, reimbursed? What happened? Insurance? Like, I got a million and one questions. Like, how? What was the bounce back from that?
So what we did, we went and again, this is a very small town, right? Mm-hmm. Very small town. So went to the fire marshal, went to two different fire marshals because, again, it's so small. Like, the fire department could come from one or two places. So they didn't even know who responded to the call. So we had to do a lot of research just to get to that, to the right fire department to actually handle the case.
Right.
Went through doing all that due diligence. We went through talking to them, and they're so small. So by the time we, you know, talking to them and they actually finding the paperwork and finding the report that they filled out for the fire and all of that, it's like, they were like, one or two things can happen, right? So mm-hmm. you can attempt to file charges, but again, it has to be an investigation done to prove that it happened. And then once it happens, what is going to be the resolve? Mm-hmm. They ain't got no money. We ain't getting no money. Now, yes, they could have faced some jail time or whatever, but I'm just like, I want my freaking money. Mm-hmm. Like, I either want money or I want to take it out in blood. One or the other. I don't really care about nobody going to jail. Like, for me, I... either pay me my money or you're going to run this fade. One or the other going to happen for me.
Something happening.
But them just facing some court and charges and all, that wasn't nothing for me.
Right.
And then we got to pay the attorney fees. And, you know what I mean? It would have cost us more trying to prosecute and all of that versus, you know what I mean? Lesson learned. It's some things that we didn't do properly. So we got to take accountability, right?
Right.
So we had to take accountability for that. And we just like, you know what? It's a loss, but in the end, it's going to be a win in the end, because all we get ready to do is take that lot, because it was actually a nice size lot and it's off the road. So we're about to take that lot and basically we're about to build tiny homes right there. So
there you go. There you go.
Listen, the silver solution lock. Oriented. You just got to pivot. You know what I mean? That's you got to pivot. See where you went wrong, adjust, and make corrections.
38%. That's the amount of entrepreneurs that are struggling to get their business funded because their personal credit isn't where it needs to be. Now, you can look into alternatives like corporate credit cards and vendor accounts, but the truth is, the easiest way to get access to 5 to 6 figures in funding is to have good personal credit. As an entrepreneur, the stress of trying to build a successful business is already enough as is. So why work harder than you need to when you can simplify the funding process by getting your credit restored? My company, Takeoff Financial, has served hundreds of entrepreneurs just like you by helping them avoid the pain of getting denied for business funding by restoring their personal credit, and we want you to be the next one. So click the link above or below this video to secure your free consultation, and let's put you in position to get the funding that your business needs.
That's it. That's all it's about. So listen, I know we're getting close to the end and we got to get you out of here. Before we do, I want to quickly harp back to when I had first met you in person. And I want to share a very, very short story that I think will be a great way to close this thing out. So like I joked about earlier, you know, seeing you on stage for the first time, I think you were up there for like 30, 45 minutes, some crazy amount of time, just going like nonstop. Charles Noonan was in the crowd. He was talking. Yeah. You weren't even teaching. It was really a performance.
Yeah.
So to speak. Like 1 second she's teaching. The next second she's like talking smack to Charles Noonan. Shout out to my guy, Charles. Talking smack to Joseph Griffin. Y'all ain't nothing. This is where the real estate money is. All right, let's get back to the information. You and the crowd. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first 5 minutes before you even really got into the game? Do you remember what happened in the first 5 minutes of that presentation? If you don't, it's fine. But I'm curious to know if you remember what happened before you even really got into the game. As soon as you got on stage, before you even got into the information, you said, the first thing you said was, the biggest thing I want you guys in this room to take away is KISS. Keep it simple, sis. That was your thing. You got everyone else in the room say it, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, you said, I'm going to give y'all an example. That you called somebody out in the crowd. And you said, you right there, what's your name? I forget the young lady's name.
Yeah.
And then there was a young lady who was sitting next to her. He said, you, what's your name? And then they gave her name and said, okay, cool. You two are accountability partners now. From today moving forward, you guys are going to share information right here, right now. And you're going to take the information I'm about to give you. And every single week, y'all are going to meet up with each other and stay up to speed with who's hitting what goals and what do we have to do and all these different things. Put your number in her phone. And I remember, and I was up on the balcony, so I'm watching from behind, and I remember seeing like how hesitant both of them were to do something as simple as just share information, like share each other's information and just take that first step, right? You guys are about to get $1 million worth of game that you can literally take and hit the ground running. And something as simple as putting your number in this person's phone was a big deal. Yeah. And they almost kind of looked at you like you were joking. And you're like, oh, you think I'm playing? You got off the stage. You said, I need you to put your number in her phone right now. Y'all about to be accountability partners. And she put a number in the phone. She said, cool, now you about to go on Facebook and I'm gonna show you what Facebook groups you need to go to.
Yeah.
So I put it, and they're like, you almost had to like pull them to like take those actionable steps. And the reason why I shared that story, and I remember that moment so vividly, and I think it's such a beautiful way to close this out, is because a huge thing that I see in just entrepreneurship, and I'm sure you see it in the real estate space as well, because you have thousands of mentees. Mm-hmm. The biggest obstacle most people deal with is never money. It's never circumstance. It's never my husband won't support me. My wife won't support me. It's never I'm too old. It's them.
Yeah.
Like their biggest obstacle is them. So for me, as we close, we just gave everyone who's watching this episode a ridiculous amount of information they've been able to learn from your stories, your successes and your downfalls and beyond. If someone who's watching this, more specifically the women who are watching this, that want to get into this real estate space, and they're struggling to get out of their own way, what words of wisdom could you share with them to finally take that leap in 2024?
First and foremost, do it scared. Mm-hmm. I don't operate without fear. There are some fears, you know, in the back of my mind that happens. I don't let fear paralyze me, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't allow that. You have to get out of being afraid to take the next step. I'm one of those people. And if you just absolutely just can't do it, tap in to me. Like, leverage my insane way of going out and being a massive, imperfect action taker. That's mm-hmm. me. So either one or two things you got to do. Either be scared and say, okay, I'm scared, but do it anyway. Do it anyway. That's one. And two, if you just can't do that, utilize my strength some kind of way. Like, yo, play this back in the back of your head. Come follow my page and get some inspiration, some motivation from me. I'm one of those people, again, like Marvin was talking about, I don't just share my ups and successes. I shared the losses and the L's too, but I don't consider them. They're not losses to me. They're lessons. I consider them lessons, and it just makes me that much better. It makes me that much better. And also, Marvin, Well, go ahead. Do you have?
No, you go. The floor is yours. Go ahead, talk to them.
I was gonna say, like, I'm a big proponent. I'm glad you mentioned, like, especially women. I don't discriminate against the fellas. I have no, like, I'm not a feminist. I'm not, like, I love, when I say love, I mean, I love my black men. So I'm not against men at all. But I just have a certain passion for women. Because I am one, number one. But two, that's who mostly supports and follows me anyway. So my mission is more so catered towards the women. And I do have, you know, a support for women who, if you do need, again, that additional help, additional encouragement, additional knowledge, etc., then I do have that for you. But you have to develop the mindset. So when you were talking about that, you have to develop the mindset. A lot of people hear it and they think it's cliche. But when I tell you, your mind is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level. It's your mind. It's your mind. You have to reprogram it, the subconsciously. Even if you have to listen to something at night before you go to bed, when you're riding to work or doing, you know, leisurely things, stop playing that BS music in the background that's hindering you from, you know what I'm saying? It really does impact y'all. Listen, the frequencies and stuff, they have no frequency set for a certain reason. That's another story for another day. But start listening to things that are going to enhance and improve your life, y'all. Right. Listen to Marvin's podcast on your way to work. Listen to Marvin's podcast on your way to pick the children up from school. Listen to Marvin's podcast when you're working out at the gym. Listen to Marvin's podcast. Listen.
He said it, not me, ladies and gentlemen. I'll let her say it.
Listen to Marvin's podcast, y'all. Listen to the podcast when you are just doing these leisurely things. You might not think that it's making a difference, but it's reprogramming your subconscious, which fuels your conscious mind. It's going to make a difference. I promise you that.
1,000%. 1,000%. Sis Shanika, thank you for giving me one of my all-time personal favorite interviews. I had an absolutely incredible time sitting down with you here today. Your energy is infectious. Your stories are inspirational. Your message is powerful, and you as a human are just incredible, and I'm excited to see how this impacts the masses. Before I let you go, for those who don't know, let them know where you can find you. Of course, we'll leave the links in the description of the episode, but let them know where they can find you, and let them know if you have anything coming up.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for having me, Mark, Marvin. It's been an absolute pleasure being with you as well. So you can follow me at Sis Shanika on Instagram, Sis Shanika on Facebook. I don't do all the other social media platforms. I have a free Facebook group, Real Estate Investing A to Z. Upcoming, I have a women's only group membership. Rich Girl Click is for all my ladies out there that are looking to become rich so we can travel together and we can get our bag up and we can do the things that we like to do as women. So that's that. And then in a few months, I have my annual real estate investing conference that is also women only. I have women only speakers, women only attendees.
Come on now.
It's absolutely insane. It's called Live Wired, and Wired is an acronym for Women in Real Estate Dominating. So, so feel Love free, it. All my ladies that are listening, feel free to tap in. Fellas, you can learn to, you know what I mean? You can learn to. I be having things. I do some challenges here and there that the fellas absolutely can take a part of. But just finished one. We've helped with Charles Noonan. We helped over 300 or 400. I lost count. 300 or 400 people or properties, new property owners. We helped buy new properties. And now we have a group that we are helping to develop those properties. So, yeah, we out here. We out here in the field really doing it. We really doing this thing.
I love it. Listen, Sis Shanika, thank you once again. And for everyone else watching at home, thank you for taking a second out of your day to watch this episode. And if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second, take a minute, take an hour right here, right now to like this episode, share this episode, and show the podcast some love. As always, I'm your host, Marvin Francois, Miss Shanika Lene. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you, and God bless. Peace. Thank you.